Hi, this is Jen. Welcome to the latest episode of the Minorities in Publishing podcast. For new and returning listeners, you may know you can find the podcast at minoritiesinpublishing.tumblr.com or on Twitter at minoritiesinpub. And this is another Skype interview. I've been doing a lot of those, which is good, actually, I feel like, because then you know that publishing is not central to New York only. So I'm really happy to speak to Marcus Kwame Anderson, who is an illustrator and cartoonist for the comic Snow Days and also the East Raven series. And he has a bunch of other stuff he's going to tell us about as well. But I'm really happy to have you on, Marcus, because illustrators, underrepresented heroes.
it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me. I'm always always happy to speak about publishing, illustration, and all the other things associated with it.
Yes, and it's so important. And I feel as though in having conversations like Annie Koyama, who's the publisher of Koyama Press, and Nyla Magruder, she was on the podcast on the first year. It's such a specific skill. And there's been issues with representation and illustration for eons, but we don't talk about it, oddly.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I'm one of the many things I do is I'm a part of a podcast where we speak about that a lot. So it's definitely a subject that's near and dear to my heart.
Mm-hmm. Or really, I should say us writers are unaware of it and y'all illustrators are very aware of it. So you're a formal artist. You do art that's classified as fine art and then also that's classified as illustration. And when looking at classifications, I'm using air quotes here, between them, it seems even in the definition of them, of art itself, one is considered more intellectual and the other is more for mass consumption. And I wanted to know, would you agree with that? But also as an artist who studied this form, how are you taught to look at those kind of different classifications of art? Because I'm sure people comment on how it looks and how it feels and what audience it's for.
Right. All right. So that's a very good question. It's funny because the way I look at it, I'm actually not very crazy about labels. So if you look mm-hmm. at my website or whatever, there is a section for fine art and there's mm-hmm. an illustration section. And it's more like, for me, a matter of speaking the language. That being said, there is a certain element of, you know, yes, maybe illustration, a lot of things that maybe fall under the illustration umbrella tend to be things that are more for mass consumption. But I love creativity, period. And I love creating things. And, you know, there's definitely a lot of me in everything I draw, whether it's a quote unquote illustration or whether it's a piece of fine art. I guess if I had to draw a distinction, for me, a lot of times the fine art, sometimes, you know, it might get classified that way because of the medium, you know, like definitely some of the things I do that are a little bit more digital would tend to be classified under illustration because that's how the business tends to classify them. I know a lot of the really personal things that I do, I tend to put that under the fine art umbrella. But I feel like the boundaries of that, if you ask me personally, are always a little fuzzy between illustration and fine art. But mm-hmm. for the sake of presenting it to the world and, you know, the language that is out there, I will use those classifications. I don't know if that answered your question.
It does. It does. Because when I also look at the work of, say, Frank Morrison or Kadir Nelson, their stuff is actually painted. It's not, I don't believe right. their stuff is digital. Not all of it, anyways.
No, definitely not. I know Kadir Nelson, because that's the thing, is like, we have a lot of his books. My daughter, the storybooks that we would get her a lot of times when we read, I'll always check that copyright page, just because I'm always interested in what medium the artist used. And I know Kadir Nelson, you know, he paints in oils.
But he'd be considered an illustrator. So that's why I was kind of wondering.
Yeah, it's a weird line.
Because even in, you know, in the writing game, and you write as well as being an illustrator, you know, we have the distinctions of this is for young readers, this is for adult readers, this is literary, this is genre. And I imagine in talking to friends who've also gotten, you know, fine art degrees, you know, oh, this is abstract, this is contemporary, this is this, and how you're kind of always within these, no matter what medium you're using in terms of representation and art, you're constantly being kind of said, you have to have a label for this in some way.
It's funny. I mean, in addition to illustration and painting, I'm sure we were going to get into this anyway, but like I do a lot of other, I've done a lot of other creative things over the years. So sometimes I've always found it interesting that people will know me as a creative person in the context that they came across me. You know, so like for instance, I write poetry is one of the things that I do. I haven't really been, you know, reading publicly as much in recent years just because I've been so busy with illustration. But maybe about like 7 or 8 years ago when I was really out there reading poetry, some people knew me strictly as a poet. And then if they came to know that I did art too, in their minds I was more the poet than the artist. It's interesting too. And I think it also varies based on the interest that people bring to the table as well, how they view you. But I've always found that like as a person who's done a lot of things, that people kind of filter out like what's most important to them or how they see you. So, you know, it's interesting.
Makes sense. I was introduced to you as an illustrator. So this
Right.
poetry thing is very intriguing. I hate to.
Yeah, I do. Well, I mean, that's been a part of my journey is not to put down any of my interests, but to learn to focus so that I actually get things done. You know what I mean? And so I haven't been doing as much poetry in recent years just because I have been really focused on finishing some of my illustration projects, things that do fall under the illustration umbrella.
And being that you are in New York, just not New York City.
Right. I'm in the Albany, New York region, so about 3.5 hours north of New York City.
And I was talking to another recent guest, Rahul Mehta, and we're talking about being marginalized people with parents and not necessarily being in the New York City life, so that we're not necessarily surrounded by art per se. I should revise that statement. It's not as capitalized in certain areas where you may not see it as much in terms of all the museums or all the artwork on the subways and public transportation, the way that it's kind of tethered so much to the city life, at least. So when we're talking about being children of families from marginalized backgrounds. Sometimes our parents have migrated here or immigrated here. And how art doesn't seem like a tangible way to make money to our parents, and we go through it anyway for some reason.
Right. This subject is near and dear to my heart too, but go ahead.
Did you bump into that from the visual artist perspective and knowing that you do poetry as well, where your parents were like, no, don't do that?
That's a great question because my parents, my family, you know, we emigrated from Jamaica when I was very young. You know, I always say that a lot of times immigrant families, I mean everybody's parents in general, I think there can be a fear of, you know, people being a starving artist, becoming a starving artist. But definitely culturally for us, there was very much you work hard, you learn, you go out and you find yourself a career that will be stable. You know what I'm saying? And like that was the focus. I always say that I've spoken about this a lot recently, but you know, I feel fortunate that even though that was there with my parents, I think they looked at me and they knew that like this kid is determined to do art one way or the other. So there was support. You know, my father's still, you know, I think he sort of balanced with it. Like he was always about like, all right, well, you can be an artist or study art, but maybe study a branch of it that's more, you know, commercial. I mean, there's the labels again, you know, but something where maybe there might be some business stability to it. So, you know, that actually was which was fine with me because I grew up reading comic books and I drew all types of things, but drawing, my love of drawing comic books is really what got me into art. And so, I figured that like drawing comic books fell under the umbrella of illustration anyway. So I was, you know, very okay with following a path of illustration. And it didn't hurt that I had just a wonderful art teacher in high school who, you know, didn't make it a secret that I was her favorite student. And, you know, she really supported me in what I wanted to do. So it was cool. And I think my parents saw that too. And they were like, all right, maybe he won't starve if he goes into art. You know, it was definitely a big part of the conversation, but they supported me. And my mother, she always did. Like, she would payday, she would always bring me home like a new sketchbook. So I would fill them up when I was a kid. I would just, you know, fill up a sketchbook pretty quickly. She made sure I always had something to draw. So yeah, so there was definitely support, but there was at the same time those fears that I wouldn't be doing the classic immigrant thing and getting something stable. So
how did you get into art? You said you're doing it since you were a kid and you had the support of teacher. So was it before that? Was it a certain book, or was it just the consistency of doing it that you realized you really wanted to pursue it?
Kind of all of the above. The earliest, I think all kids, you know, if not draw, yeah, I think all kids doodle at some point, or, yeah, you know, they'll have their crayons or, mm-hmm, and they'll kind of doodle. The way I describe it is I never really stopped. You know what I mean? Like, I kind of kept wanting to create things. As I got a little bit older, like, you know, like in grade school, I would maybe draw like the movie characters that I saw, or cartoon characters. But I really liked that. I was always drawn to the idea of just creating something, mm-hmm, you know. So that was with me for a long time. Like, I just kind of, you know, kept drawing. Drawing was my first love. And then, yeah, when I got to high school, my art teacher, Miss Pace, I always feel fortunate that I had someone that was like, no, this is a thing that you can actually do as a career, you know. And I actually try to pay that forward now, you know, when I interact with young people or get to work with kids, because I think a lot of them don't have any idea that, like, you know, these are possibilities for you. Mm-hmm. These are things. So I don't know. That's a part of my journey too, is just wanting to be that example for other people, mm-hmm, that I had in my own life, you know, because I do feel, mm-hmm, fortunate. I feel like, if my interests weren't nurtured, then, you know, I very well could have been another person that was just unhappy doing something else and, you know, not following my dreams.
Mm. So with that, how does it work in terms of your finding your voice, so to speak, or your aesthetic style? How does one come to that? Is that really just practice, studying what people have done or being guided with it? Because with writing, it's so much about a lot of consumption. You're, mm-hmm, constantly reading, and hopefully you're finding your own voice through that and getting guidance of how, what works, what doesn't work.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. There's definitely a lot of that. I remember another early memory I had was, you know, when I would be taken on like a school trip to a museum to look at artwork, I would always try to think backwards, you know, and like, not just like look at it and be like, hey, that's a cool picture, painting or whatever, and then move on. I would look at it and I would try to like figure out like what the artist had done and how it happened, you know what I mean? So I've always had a curiosity, you know, just how things are visually composed and how they come together. So in a sense, I feel like in my brain, there's always like a tape recorder going, you know what I'm saying? Like when I'm seeing images, or even just images from life, you know, like how somebody might stand, or just different gestures and things like that. So I'm always taking, mm-hmm, things in. And yeah, I think that it is important to learn and take in the valuable, you know, bits that you can take from all around you. But at the same time, like, yes, develop your own voice. Like, that was really important for me. And I do put a lot of thought into that, which kind of brings it back to what we're talking about, illustration and fine art. You know, sometimes, like, for illustration, I feel like it can allow you the freedom to, like, one project might call for one style and another project might call for a slightly different style. So I do have that flexibility with how I work there. And so the way I always put it is that, like, I kind of have my core elements of my, you know, quote unquote style, I'm able to kind of like tweak it depending on what I need to do. So like for some projects, it might call for something that's a lot more realistic. Some projects might call for something that's more cartoony or somewhere in between. So I do like having flexibility to do that. And another thing that's helped with that is I teach art in figuring out how to, you know, translate the fundamentals to people. Mm. I found that it really keeps me on top of my game. You know what I mean? Because a lot of times you can fall into, as a writer, as an artist, as a creative person in general, you can kind of fall into a rhythm of just kind of doing and repeating something. You know what I mean? But like when you have to really break it down for someone and be like, these are the, you know, most important visual elements, or this is how composition works, or this is perspective, etc. Like, those things, that it keeps me on top of my game, because like mm-hmm. that the fundamentals are always in my mind, you mm-hmm. know. So I feel like using that as a framework, I can really build off of that, and that's where I can, you know, work in a few different styles.
Because I see also online a lot, the especially Instagram, you know, you see people do fast caption of how they do an illustration. You know, it's like 30 seconds, a video sped up fast. And you see, digital and how they do the layers and all that stuff. So I've been seeing that a lot. And I wonder if that's been also kind of like a self-serving guide for some people who maybe can't afford that formal instruction.
No, I think, you know, I mean, that's like a perfect point, because it's actually a great time to be an artist. And I, you know, for young artists coming up, I feel like there's examples everywhere of artists and the creative process. In some ways, there used to be more of a wall. Like, you know, like when I was in high school, you know, you could seek it out and you could try to, you know, find more information about how artists did what they did. But now it's just like you mentioned, it's like you literally can follow your favorite artists on social media and really just see bits of their process and how things come together. Yeah, I think that it's a great time. I think finding reference for things is easier than ever. So, you know, it's a good time to be an illustrator.
I always love it when people say that, because then I'm like, is it? But I don't want to be all pessimistic person.
Well, no, I'm curious. I want to hear your point of view. What are you thinking when you ask that?
Because I feel like it is a good time, because there are the methods, right? You can do web comics, you could do self-publishing, you can find people so much more easier in a way. You can find editors much more easily. You can potentially find your audience much more easily. But then there's that oversaturation of the market and the bevy of information that we have, information overload, so to speak. So I wonder if it's like a mixed blessing in a way of like, we can do things much more easier because we have the capacity, but thus.
I see where you're going, and I think that is true. I think, you know, even beyond just the field of illustration, there is an overload in general. Mm-hmm. You know, definitely. just as far as all the information we take in, like, you know, and visuals too. So, yeah, I guess there definitely is a mixed blessing, and I think that is where, for myself as an artist, just finding ways to keep your art in front of people or find new ways to be engaging, like, that's helped, you know, because you are fighting for people's attention, and it's so easily diverted to something else. It happens to me, you know. I get online and I have to take breaks from social media also just to get things done.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? But like, it's a fight, but I still, in general, while I feel like it is a mixed blessing, I do think it is a positive thing, because I think it's opened things up. So even though there's so many people that you're kind of, you know, elbowing for space with, there are people who have succeeded. Like even some of the people that you mentioned recently, who, you know, maybe through conventional methods wouldn't have necessarily gotten where they are, because mm-hmm. they would have had to go through kind of gatekeeping methods that were, you know, that just overlooked a lot of talent. Not necessarily intentionally, but, you know, sometimes it's like you have some people who would be, you know, editors or art directors, etc., and their attention span can only go so far, mm-hmm. you know, and then a lot of times it's who you know.
Yeah.
And that's where sometimes, even when you were speaking about the idea of creators from marginalized communities, how sometimes we don't tend to be amongst the people who are known. So, you know, there's challenges in that way. So mm-hmm. I think being able to find your audience is a great thing. It's not necessarily easy, but I mm-hmm. think that it can be done.
And I want to go back to what you were saying, because you mentioned, and even in looking at your art, seeing the fine art, I'm using the air quotes again, and the illustrations, like, there's kind of somewhat familiarity, right? So even looking at the East Raven illustrations, and it's a different family, and Snow Days, it's a slightly different feel, it's more teenagers. When you look at that, do you feel like that's trademark Marcus Kwame Anderson versus, like we were mentioning, Kadir? Kadir has a very specific style. Like, you look at Kadir's stuff, you're like, yeah, that's Kadir Nelson. And he doesn't stray from that. Not to say it's I'm not saying he's stagnant, but it's just such a familiarity to his work that I wouldn't expect to see East Raven series, you know, from him. But with you, you're able to do like those paintings, those kind of realistic lifelike figures of like Malcolm X and our American heroes, but also do these kind of warm things where you're presenting like cute black families, cute little girls or teenagers in baggy jeans and tight jeans and all that stuff too. So do you think you have like this specific style, or is it like you were saying, this ability to go one way and another way with the mediums you're using?
Well, yeah, like I think that, even like with the example of Kadir Nelson, I feel like he's just mastered what he's done to mm-hmm. this extent where it's almost like, why would he do something else? But
makes sense.
I know for myself, it all kind of like satisfies a different part of my creativity. I mentioned before, like the last couple of years have been very illustration heavy for me, and I haven't done as much painting, but like while I've been doing all my illustrations, all the ideas and the visions of these paintings that I will be doing, they're kind of like stacking up in my brain. Mm-hmm. So I always describe it like it's kind of like, you know, these things just want to come out and they come through me. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so that's where it's like the like East Raven, for example, like I love the work I'm doing on Snow Days, but like you mentioned, it's a book that's more like a teen and up book as like the father of like a young child. Like, you know, I wanted to have something that she could read because like she's a very creative person herself, but she's always taken an interest in the things that I make and the stories and everything. So she would ask to read Snow Days, and there's nothing too crazy in Snow Days, but at the same time, like, it's definitely a teenage book. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted something that like, that number one, she could read, but also just like little kids in general could read as well. And also something that kind of like young Marcus would have liked to have read. So that's kind of where East Raven came from. It was initially going to be like a very short, quick mini comic, but as I was writing it, it just kind of kept growing and the ideas kept growing. So I have a lot of ideas for it beyond what you see in the preview, short preview that's online. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's like, so the way it works for me, to get back to your question, is I don't know, like I feel like my creativity is a large thing that kind of encompasses like all of the things that I love and are interested in. And there's a lot of balance is a big thing with me in general, you know, as a person. And like, I think my creativity is very balanced in a lot of ways too. It's not just any one thing. I mean, even going back to what we're talking about, some people may know me through one lane of my creativity, but like, I have so many different things that are just as much me, you know, as like East Raven is me, just like, you know, Snow Days is, and just like my paintings are as well. So, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know.
Well, since we're already on the topic of East Raven, I wanted to talk about the difference with collaboration versus owning all of it. And you collaborate on Snow Days.
Yes. Yes, I do. But yeah, I collaborate with my good friend, Leo Fairman. I've known him for years. And just to show how connected everything is, we actually met through the local Albany poetry scene, you know, because he's a poet and I'm a poet. And yeah, so we got to know each other through writing. And then we just kind of like had the same love of music and writing. And like we read a lot of the same books and stuff. So we just kind of connected over creative stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've been friends for years. And we had kind of kicked around the idea for this one graphic novel concept that Leo had like years ago. Like at this point, it's probably like 12 years ago. Mm. And, you know, like I had done sketches and everything, but it was the type of thing where I was young enough, I was in my 20s, and I wasn't really as focused. I don't think either of us were, and I just wasn't in a place where I was ready to finish it. But then maybe about like 5 years ago, Leo kind of came to me with this idea for this other comic, which would grow to be Snow Days. And he was serious about it. Like, he was serious about it in a way that he hadn't been serious about the previous story, you know. And I don't know, maybe it was just us kind of being a little bit older and wiser or whatever. But, like, it was the timing and everything kind of aligned for Snow Days. And Snow Days is a story. I'm kind of going all the way into it, but just mm-hmm. real quick, Snow Days began, you know, it germinated as this from this real life anecdote that Leo had from, you know, when he was a teenager and he was making a little bit of money shoveling snow, and then it kind of grew into this idea which would become Snow Days. To answer your question, that's how that collaboration came about.
Mm-hmm. So how does it work then in terms of the collaborative process? Because Leo's doing the writing, you're doing the illustration. Is he doing kind of, I know there's a format in terms of this kind of collaboration for comics and graphic novels. So how does that go exactly? Is it like he kind of outlines and then you go by the sketching and then you kind of work that out?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's one of the things I love about comics is that there is a format, but then there's a lot of different approaches that different creative teams take. You know, like some writers do make a very, you know, rough outline, and they really give the illustrator a lot of room to roam and kind of like create things. And some people, like, you know, they plot it out to the minute details in the background. And we really have something like in the middle. I would actually say, like, the way we do it, like, Leo leaves me a lot of room to just tell the story visually, mm-hmm. you know, and he doesn't micromanage it, which is kind of how I like it, because I put a lot of thought into everything that's in a panel or that's, you know, that's in the environment in the panel and how it comes together. So if there is something that's kind of unclear, like, I'll ask a ton of questions, like, you know, just to try to really get an understanding of what we're creating. Mm-hmm. So, but Leo's scripts, they're definitely detailed. They're not sparse. And also to answer your previous question, I definitely, like, we collaborate a lot on the ideas, you know, and especially since we're friends too, like, if we just happen to be speaking, you know, a lot of times we'll end up kicking around ideas. And it's interesting because it's kind of like we know these characters. We know where they're going beyond what, you know, the readers know. So we'll just kind of get into a conversation about maybe who they are or what they're doing or they will be doing. And those are the things that end up growing into the story. So, like, I'm definitely involved in the process straight through. But yeah, Leo, when it comes to the, you know, actually putting pen to page and, you know, crafting the words, that's definitely Leo. And then, you know, on the artistic end, I just, like I mentioned, I just, like, put a lot of thought into the world. As far as, like, Snow Days was concerned, it was really, I enjoyed the process of kind of building the world of Snow Days, because mm-hmm. I wanted the look to be very distinct. Mm-hmm. I didn't want it to look like any one particular thing. So I kind of, I worked at creating something that would be, you know, have a youthful look. And because a big theme of Snow Days is the bridge between childhood and adulthood, mm-hmm. you know, like our protagonists, they're not adults by any means, but they're kind of on that cusp of the bridge of childhood and adulthood. The story deals a lot with things like class and different family situations. So even though you have a bunch of kids in the story who are of the same age range, the way they experience life and they traverse life is, you know, it varies a lot from character to character. So, you know, I mean, we explore a lot of that in the story. So, and it also takes place in the 90s, you know, which is a time I remember vividly. So it's like, it's kind of like all of those things are in there, as far as the visual style that I was creating. You know, I wanted something that captured the youthful energy, but mm-hmm. also captured that kind of edgy 90s on the cusp of adulthood type of thing. That's, you know, how I approach it. As far as, like, storytelling, you know, a lot of things I spoke about before, like composition is big. Trying to make the visual side of storytelling as dynamic as the story mm-hmm. itself is important to me as well.
How long does it take? I was about to ask what's the ratio, but that's probably not a fair question of writing versus illustrating. But the illustrating end is not something that is quick.
Definitely, when it comes to comics in general, the drawing part, the illustration takes far longer than the writing phase. That's not to say that the writing is easy. You know, like comic writers labor over their work. I always say that, like, you know, if you want to be a comic illustrator, if you're like, you know, if you can take a decent amount of punishment, then you can do it. But like, there's, you know, like, art in general is a lot of work, obviously, but you know, there's definitely other art forms where, you know, you don't labor over it as much. So yeah, it's rewarding at the same time, you know. But
yeah,
it's a lot of work.
But on East Raven, you're both writer and illustrator. And when I talked to Nyla Magruder about that, she was talking about the problems with self-editing because you're not bouncing these ideas around with anybody so much. Maybe you are, you have, you know, critique groups or partners that aren't necessarily contributing to the creation, but might be able to give feedback. But she was talking about the pressure and the time it takes, because then if you realize something in the story doesn't work, you also know as illustrator that means that's a whole lot of more work to recreate those scenes that you had already planned out but realize aren't working. And sometimes you may realize that in the illustration process and not even in the writing process.
I think you hit the nail on the head as far as like bouncing the ideas off of people. Because I feel like, you know, creatively, it's very, very easy when you know, the whole project is you essentially, you know, it's very easy to write in a vacuum and not see it with fresh eyes. Mm-hmm. And it just so happens that like a few of my students are working on stories of their own right now. So it kind of goes back to what I was saying, like some of the critiques that I give them really help me, you know, in my storytelling. And just as I'm teaching them the elements of good writing and cohesive writing and really translating getting your ideas across to the readers, like, you know, those things, I'm like, oh yeah, okay, I need to take my own advice. So yeah, you know, it is a challenge, but definitely bouncing things off of people is important. I feel fortunate because, you know, my wife is an artist as well. She's a creative person. So we definitely bounce ideas off each other a lot and, you know, trust each other's, ideas and the critiques that we give to one another. So, but it is important to be able to step out of your own bubble every now and then and get some feedback from someone you trust is what I would say.
Yeah, definitely. Not those randos.
yeah, because, you know, with the whole internet thing, there's definitely a lot of random advice that's unsolicited that you can get. Like, I always joke that, like, you know what you should do is like a statement that I want banned.
You know? Should. I was told in a workshop years ago, don't say should.
Right.
Just don't say. You might want to. I'd suggest consider this. Never should.
And it comes down to balance, though, because, like, you know, you also, I think creative people also don't want to be the person that won't take any critique. Mm-hmm. Or that one thing I learned early, which I carry with me to this day, is, and I caught myself doing it, especially when I was younger, is if you're, say, you're showing your comic work to somebody, and like an editor or something, or just another artist, and they're like, you know, this is really great, but you may want to work on your, you know, insert art term here. Mm-hmm. You have to resist that urge to explain, you know, to be like, you know, oh, but I was just doing blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, it's like, even because, you know, there's times, right, where people's advice may be off. I think it's important to be able to take it in and then, you know, process it and be like, all right, like, number one, does this person know what they're talking about? And is this something that I need to do? You know what I mean? Because I look at it like I'm always growing as an artist. I don't look at it like, oh, I'm Marcus and I'm illustrating, you know, and I teach art, so I got it all figured out. Like, you know, I'll when I speak to artist friends, when I speak to other artists, you know, we'll talk about ideas and I'll pick up something new, and then sometimes they'll learn something new from me. So I don't think we should ever like stop growing or stop seeking information. So but it's all about balance. You know, you don't want to necessarily be a person that turns away good advice, but you know, at the same time, you also don't want to necessarily
absorb all the advice.
Able to discern and know who would be a random person that doesn't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, you figure that out pretty quickly, I think.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Once you don't try to please everybody, you're like, that person's ridiculous. Never mind.
That's the dangerous part about the internet is everybody's an expert. You know, everybody's a critic and everybody's an expert.
Yes. So one of my last questions is, I know that some illustrators, or really just creative types in general, have full-time careers. Like, the creativity is not necessarily something that may be part of their career or something they can, you know, monetize. So Nyla Magruder, Vivian Tu, or Vivian Toe, they both do animation as full-time careers, and that really helped them segue so that they can also do their illustrations on the side as well, while staying up to date with how to make animation in a field that also brings forth more of their creativity. And they do it with pretty much like Disney and DreamWorks, a major company. Right. So what's your advice as someone who's been doing this for a while and who also teaches it? What is your advice to budding illustrators of what's available to them in terms of jobs and what they may face trying to break into this industry, whether they go traditional publishing or aim to self-publish?
First and foremost, I would say, I mean, I would definitely give the advice that that I was given from my illustration advisor when I was in college. You know, he recommended that, you know, if you're trying to break into the illustration business, that you have at the very least a part-time job while you're trying to get yourself established. I didn't necessarily take the advice well, because I've always, since college, I've always had a full-time job, which has, you know, resulted in a lot of sleepless nights when it comes to getting my artwork done. You know, you definitely have to put food on the table. And so, yeah, it is good to find something. And, you know, as you mentioned, if it's possible to find something that's close or related to your interests, that's positive. That being said, I know artists who work at the gym, you know, at Planet Fitness or something like that, and they're doing what they do. It's more about getting steady enough money to live so that you can fund your dreams. You know what I mean? So I think it's great if you can teach art or do something somewhat art related like I do. But if that's not the case, I think my first advice would be just to find something that will, number one, help you survive and fund your dreams. And then, you know, gradually from there, as you network and make connections with people, that's where sometimes the work that is more related to your career will come in. And I think networking in general is huge. Like, as far as my advice goes, definitely network, be open to meeting people. I'm a person who's naturally an introvert, but I had to learn, you know, the process of networking, getting out there and getting to know people. And even going back to what we were talking about, how in the past people from you know, marginalized communities oftentimes aren't necessarily in the conversation or aren't, you know, don't have the right connections, quote unquote. Sometimes we have to make them, and even if, like I said, the traditional gatekeepers aren't going to see you, then, you know, there's other people. There's an audience that is out there. 'Cause the interesting thing is, I feel like, and I've seen it, comics and illustration and other media, some of the overlooked communities, you know, that over the years publishers have looked at and been like, oh, those aren't the people who are buying these books. Some of those, I mean, number one, it's an untruth. You know what I mean? Like, I existed, and a lot of, you know, young boys and girls like me existed, young brown boys and girls existed who loved comics. And, you know, the comics industry kind of went on and had this, you know, monolithic vision of what a comic reader looked like and who they were. And what it did was it created this vacuum of these people who grew up with the love of comics, but also were hungry to see the medium they loved in a way that included them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I think that's what you're seeing right now is you're seeing a lot of, you know, I mean, I call it an explosion of creators. There are people like Nyla Magruder, and I'm going to forget people if I start naming people, but, you know, mm-hmm. there's just so many great black creators out there, and just people of color, and just like all types of people who are making the work that they wanted to see. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think it's very important to network and to not be afraid to say, you know, I'm here. And one of the biggest reasons why earlier I mentioned that it is a great time to be an illustrator is there's just so much information at our fingertips. You know, like, I think a lot of people use the internet for crazy things, and it doesn't have to be any one thing, but like there's so much positive. There's so much you can learn. Most of what I know, like, I went to school for illustration, but I didn't go to school for comic book illustration. And like a lot of what I know about comics, I just sought the information out myself. A lot of it even before there was an internet, but definitely after the internet was, you know, what it is, that just my knowledge just grew from there, because there's so much information out there. So you can find out the success stories about how some of these people who independently, who created their incredible independent work that took off, like how they did what they did, you know. Like, one thing for me is within the next year, Leo and I are planning to do crowdfunding campaign, probably on Kickstarter, for like the first graphic novel collection of Snow Days. And I've been really looking at and listening to the success stories and also the unsuccessful stories of other people's Kickstarters, because I really want to go in, you know, with all the knowledge. I think a lot of people get into something like crowdfunding and they're just like, oh, this is great. You know, you put your stuff out there, people give you money, and it's just that easy. But there's a lot of steps that go into it. There's a lot of steps that go into making sure it's seen by people, you know, who will support you. So I just think never stop seeking out information. It's really important. So network, seek information, and just, and then always never let the work itself come secondary either, because that is one thing that is a challenge for artists in this age is, you know, promoting your artwork is like a full-time job in itself. So you know, there's definitely a balance that you need to find, especially if you don't have the funds or the means to you know, have somebody promote your art for you. You know, just don't let your work suffer in your efforts to get it out there to the world. You have to find a balance as far as being a creator as well.
Good advice. I agree with all of that. And I'd add, try to get health insurance if you can.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
If you can get a job with health insurance, like, get that too, because that'll help with the stress.
most definitely, yes.
Thank you so much, Marcus, for being on the podcast. I really appreciate you talking to me. And I've been using my Skype more than usual, so that's been great.
Yeah, no, it's my pleasure. This was a great conversation. I enjoyed it.
So how may people be able to reach out to you, get in touch with you, learn more about Snow Days and East Raven series, even purchase them?
Yes. All right, so the number one place to find me in all ways is MarcusKwame.com. I'm gonna spell Kwame because I was on the phone on, like, oh, it was for my website the other day, and you know, my website is MarcusKwame.com. Mm-hmm. And the lady on the line was like, she was scared to try to pronounce it. She was like, Marcus KWAME. So I'll just spell it out just in case anyone is not familiar. It's Marcus MarcusKwame. KWAME.com. And yeah, that's the best place to find, you know, all my social media, my artwork, my illustration, my online store, comics. You can see some East Raven, see some Snow Days, and there's definitely links to my store where you can get the comics and get some prints and, mm-hmm. you know, make your walls beautiful.
Yes. And East Raven's just adorable.
Oh, thank you.
My best friend and her daughters would love that series, so I'm looking forward to sharing that with them. This little girl superheroes, Peanut and Pumpkin.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Like, I don't want to give too much away, even though there's like there's the family in the story and the little girls are along, you know, things transpire along the way where they're really going to be stepping onto the forefront of the adventure. So I'm looking forward to it. But yeah, I just as soon as I finish the first arc of Snow Days, I'm really going to jump into doing some more East Raven. So yes. Be on the lookout.
It's little black girl superheroes with natural hair. Yay! Yeah.
We need more of it.
We really do. I was just like, this is too adorable. Why don't we have this? Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
The audience knows by now why.
I think that people are going to have to realize that there is a demand, you know. And I mean, you do mm-hmm. see where I think, to differing degrees of success, some of the larger publishers have seen that there is somewhat of a demand. Mm-hmm. But I think that you know, we need to tell our stories as well.
Absolutely. So. Like T. Franklin did pretty well with her, I think it was Indiegogo she did for her Bingo love story and comic, which is about two women of color, older women of color falling in love. And that's a story you don't see either. You know?
Yeah. There's so many stories to tell, and that's the thing. I want to see everyone having a vehicle to tell all of these stories. I think storytelling will just be richer for it. You know what I mean? And we all benefit, not just the people being depicted, mm-hmm. but even the people who just kind of like are used to having the same stories and like their stories told the same way. Even they can benefit from, you know, seeing all different types of people and different types of stories told.
Yes. So Bingo Love Story by T. Franklin and East Raven Series and Snow Days by Marcus Kwame Anderson. And it's so funny she didn't know how to do Kwame. I feel like, I'm like, you don't know a lot of black people if you don't know the name Kwame.
Yeah, that's what I mean. They were out in Arizona, I think they said. So that I was like, oh, okay, yeah, maybe they don't, you know, have a lot of Kwames out there.
Yes, problem solved. I figured
it
out.
It was difficult.
I just know so many Kwames. I'm like, it's kind of like how it sounds. You know, like it sounds how it's written.
Yeah, that's the thing. To me, there's not too many other ways you could pronounce it, but, you know.
Yeah, the hard K. And anywho, I won't and then the last 20 minutes is talking about how to pronounce African names. Thank you so much again, Marcus, for being on, and really enjoy Snow Days and can't wait to hear more about the East Raven series and share it.
Okay, yeah. No, thank you. And I'll definitely keep you updated.
Awesome. So thanks also for listening. As I mentioned at the top of the episode, the podcast is at minoritiesinpublishing.tumblr.com, on Twitter at minoritiesinpub, and hear from Marcus at marcuskwame.com. Thanks again. And also, I always keep forgetting to say this, the podcast is on iTunes. So you can listen on iTunes and rate. Thanks again. Take care.